Harry Connolly, welcome to The Signal. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Aaron.
You are an accomplished documentary photographer. You've published a couple of photo books. One is called Heading Home, Growing Up in Baseball. This is a book that covers six consecutive summers of Little League in a Baltimore park. You've done another book called Fighting Chance. This documents the lives of three different children with cancer. What brought you and your photographic eye to Little Italy?
As I finish this book, I'm looking to do another project. And when I was finishing Fighting Chance, I found myself asking all these families how faith fit into this battle they had with cancer, you know, how that fit into it. And I found myself wondering why I kept asking the question. And I thought, well, maybe I should examine the role of faith in a neighborhood or a place. And somehow that led me, I thought Little Italy came to mind right away because its center is the Church of St. Leo the Great. So I went down there one day and sat in the Mass and saw this firecracker of a priest, Father Michael Salerno, and I just thought I could do something here.
That led to this day when you stood up in front of the whole congregation at St. Leo's and told everyone what you wanted to do. What was that day like? I mean, how did this all start?
That was a nerve-wracking day because Father Mike gave incredible sermons. I mean, he was very popular. He was, you know, had everybody laughing. It was like, you know, following an all-star, you know, baseball player in the same position. And so I had to get up there in a place I was really unfamiliar with and look out over all these faces that were strangers to me. And when you start a project, at least when I start a project, I don't really know what I'm doing. I kind of, you know, I know enough to get me started. And then after that, everything changes. But after that Mass, I mean, I was greeted right away by some of the significant people down there. One of my favorites was a guy named Cosmo Giordino, and Cos, as he's known. He came up to me and he said, he used to be a wedding photographer. And he said, yeah, I used to take photos, and you go to these churches, you can go up so far, and then that's as far as you can go. But at St. Leo's, you can go anywhere you want. As long as you're devout, what the hell? So I felt like I could live here, you know, for a while.
So then began this extended adventure of establishing a rapport with this neighborhood that was new to you. Talk about how that rapport evolved.
Right. Father Mike, he wrote a letter for me, a letter of introduction. He said, take this with you. You might need it, you know. And I never used it. There were a couple of people who just said no pictures. And that's fine. I mean, everyone's right to say no to me. But it was funny because, you know, I'd wander around. I'm from a large family, you know, Irish Catholic family. So in some ways, I sort of empathize with lots of the people there. And I was interested in them. And at this point in time, being interested in Little Italy is appreciated. Some people said to me, you should have been here 40 years ago. This place was something back then. And then they add, but we would have thrown you out. A stranger with a camera in our neighborhood? No way.
But as you say, the neighborhood is really still something. I mean, there is a vibrant, although somewhat shrinking community.
Right. Yeah, the 16 years, you know, after you see change when you spend that much time in one place. And photographs become time capsules almost immediately, you know, because as soon as you take it, it's gone into the past. It's just that, you know, after 14, 15 years, and you look back and you see certain people are no longer in the neighborhood or have passed away or certain institutions have changed, it starts to feel like you're recording a part of the history of the neighborhood.
Let's do something of a little radio slideshow here, I guess you could call it, and talk about some of these images mm-hmm. and the stories behind them. And I thought we'd start with this one titled, and help me pronounce his last name, Gene pulling his grandfather's hurdy-gurdy.
Oh, Gene Schiavo
pulling his grandfather's hurdy-gurdy. It's a great picture. Talk about who this man is and what this thing is he's pulling along in this wagon behind him.
Well, Gene lives in the neighborhood. The hurdy-gurdy, his grandfather had a series of hurdy-gurdies, and these are sort of like barrel organs. They actually have music built in, sort of like player piano roles, but different. And actually, this was his grandfather's last, the one he kept, after he stopped doing this. In the heyday, Gene's grandfather had like six or seven of these, and he'd rent some out. He and his brother would take a big one, and they'd walk to York, Pennsylvania. They'd push it and pull it and go the whole way and to play and to make money. His grandfather would also take it uptown, from Little Italy up to, like, you know, the center of town back in those days, and he'd play at all the bars. And at each bar, they'd send him out a drink. And Gene and his friends would sit outside at night waiting for his grandfather to come home, and they could spot the hurdy-gurdy kind of weaving its way back into the neighborhood after a night at all the Baltimore bars. But on Saturdays, he would take one of the hurdy-gurdies up to Lombard Street, where all the markets were, and he played all the different shops, and he'd come home with a whole basket full of chicken, produce, everything, from Lombard Street would come home. And eventually, these hurdy-gurdies bought two houses in Little Italy, paid for everyone's education, and made a living for this family.
Incredible story. And these are essentially giant music boxes that are operated by hand cranks.
Right. And the hurdy-gurdy picture, it has the music from like the 1930s, the last time they were changed. So when Gene plays it, he's playing the music his grandfather played.
Hmm. And I know in one of your interviews, one of his grandchildren or relatives said they buried him with one of those cranks under
his
pillow.
Right. One of the cranks that helped turn the hurdy-gurdy, when the grandfather passed away, they put one under his pillow in the coffin and said, here, Grandpa, take one with you.
It's hard to make up a story that beautiful, isn't it?
No, that's the one thing about you should have been here 40 years ago made me realize I've got to collect these stories, that I can't photograph these things, but people can tell me these stories. And so I started just doing audio recordings, and eventually I started doing video recordings, which is a little more complicated. And so, over time, I've, collected lots and lots of stories and from all lots of different people. I mean, I interviewed one man. I said, what'd your dad do? And he goes, he was a bootlegger. And then he proceeds to tell me everything about how his father did this and did that. I heard stories about gambling in the funeral home. The Delano funeral home was a good place because the police wouldn't raid the funeral home. So there'd be gambling going on.
That's a pretty good cover.
Yeah, it was. It was like, and you just hear, stories about the D'Alessandros. You hear stories about, Tommy the Elder D'Alessandro and Tommy the Younger, and Nancy Pelosi came from there. So it's at one point it was, a lot of people paid visits to the D'Alessandro house.
There's a great series of photos here that are titled Barbers Sergio and Bruno.
The Brattos.
Bratto. Yeah. Sergio and Bruno Bratto, monthly senior citizens haircuts. Who are these guys? Where are they in these pictures? And what's this monthly ritual all about?
Right. Well, Sergio and Bruno were barbers. They're brothers. Bruno was a prisoner of war, an Italian prisoner of war who was basically kept prisoner at Fort Meade. And women from Little Italy would go visit the Italian prisoners, and one of the women who visited him became his wife. And Sergio and Bruno had their own barber shop together. But at this point in time, they were both retired, and once a month they'd do give haircuts to all the older men in the neighborhood and the priests. And so this was shot right below the church, in the church hall.
That's where they would do. They would set up an improvisational
barbershop. There was a barber chair that stayed there. It was one of Sergio's old barber chairs, and he'd come in and he'd start cutting all the hair. And the men would come and they'd play cards. They played like all the Italian card games. They'd read the paper. They'd gossip, and Sergio would collect the money, and all the money would go to the church. But at the end of the day, then Bruno, Sergio's brother, would come down and they'd cut each other's hair.
Those pictures are especially magical. These two guys who have got such a history together, you can tell they're so comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading in your accounting of that day that a silence would kind of fall over the place, right? No words needed to be exchanged between them.
Right, right. And one day that I write about, up during the haircutting, there was a funeral upstairs. And you could smell the incense coming down. And the men there knew the man who was being buried. And they're talking about him and what his life was like. And so it was a very rich experience to be just sitting in this hall with these men getting their hair cut.
If you're just joining us, my guest is documentary photographer Harry Connolly. He's been photographing daily life in Baltimore's Little Italy neighborhood for the past 16 years. And this week we're looking through some of the more than 20,000 photos he made during that time. And Harry, here's one titled On the Bocce Court. Uh-huh. This is a photo of a very intense-looking guy. He's holding a green bocce ball in front of his chest. He actually looks like he could crush this bocce ball like a walnut. He's sort of like looks like a cross between Al Pacino and Lou Ferrigno. Who is this man? What's the story behind this man?
That's Dominic Petrucci, and he'll be glad you asked about him. Uh-huh. Dominic, at one point, was grossly overweight, smoked packs of cigarettes a day, and had a major heart attack. Huh. And after that, laying in that hospital bed, he decided to change. So he became this bodybuilding specimen
who he certainly did.
Who was always an incredible bocce player. And the photograph I took, though, is of him in one particular match, you know, very tense match. And he just he's got that look about him. You know, it was just a special moment. And it's funny. He loves the photograph. I gave him a copy, and I gave him a couple copies. And one he took to his favorite restaurant in Little Italy, and they framed it and put it on the bar. And somebody stole it. And he loved that somebody stole his photograph.
That didn't bother him.
He loved it. He thought that was, you know, it meant something, you know, that they wanted his photograph. So, you know, but the bocce court was, you know, it's still, you know, you go down there on any night and there's, you know, it's always something going on. And lots of the people, you know, there's great bocce playing. There's always an argument or two. There's, you know, there's lots of life, you know, there's food, there's wine sometimes. It's a great place to be.
I have to ask, you intended for this photography project to go for like a year. It ended up being 16 years. What kept you there so long? The food, right?
Well, yeah. Well, I told my wife, because she sort of, you know, knows I do these long-term projects, and I told her that I'd spend a year, and she knew I was lying, but I didn't think 16 years either. But it got to be, well, several reasons. It never felt like it was finished. And there was so much to collect. I mean, part of it was the photographs. It was the interviews. It was stories I was writing about. And then it just got out of hand. You know, it's I have this mountain of stuff. And, you know, even sorting out now is a, sort of a daunting procedure. I really only wanted to do a book out of it. You know, that's, you know, because I figured, well, I've done this book. This will make a great book. But so far that hasn't happened. It's just... you know, I'm persistent, so it'll get out there. But it's at the moment, it's you know, I've come close a couple of times with publishers saying yes, but we haven't gotten to that yes yet.
You speak facetiously about just things getting out of hand, but I mean, in all honesty, there really is something to be said for the kind of intimacy you can establish with photographic subjects, I imagine, over that long of a period of time.
Right. It was like when I did the first book, the Little League book. It was all shot in Patterson Park. And the first summer, I was a stranger. And they were wondering, who's this guy photographing our kids? And I'd come back and I'd bring small prints and give to all the kids. So they treat them as trading cards. And then the next year, more people knew me. And it got to the point after a couple of years where people, if you didn't know me, you were the outsider, because I was, you know, everyone else knew me. And literally, it sort of became the same way. I mean, literally, it's not that big a neighborhood. So they knew what I was doing. You know, I didn't, you know, there was no hit and run here. I was staying for a while.
It really does become a question of, like, your documentary philosophy, you know, because there are a lot of people, photographers, filmmakers, radio people who will be happy to drop in, catch a fleeting moment, right. And that's their, you know, sort of documentary memento of a place and moment in time. And right. Then there's right. The other way to do it.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny because, I mean, I'm a commercial photographer as well, so I have these assignments, like a day assignment or something, and I think, that's not enough time, you know, after when you get used to doing long, long projects. But, you know, it feels like it's time to put the baby to bed in the sense of... A lot has happened in 16 years. A lot of people, unfortunately, have passed away. And I feel a responsibility, besides giving them their photographs, to somehow get the whole story out.
It really is interesting to be a documentarian because you get invited into these people's lives and you end up with these incredibly personal portraits and stories. And then the project is done and you move on. But I mean, 16 years, these people have really got to feel like a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at it, it's a big chunk of time. I don't have time to do another 16-year project. I can't, you know, they have to be shorter projects, you know. Yeah. They do. And it when the project ends, the relationships don't stop. The book about the three kids with cancer, I still am in touch with them. You know, they're now, knock on wood, they've all survived and they're all, you know, grown-ups. They're all, you know, the youngest kid was 2 and a half, and he's out of college now. The little girl who was 9, she's 29. She just had a baby. So it's not just about photography for me.
I had the pleasure of attending a reception just a few days ago at Stevenson University, where a lot of the people from Little Italy who you photographed and their relatives and friends were all there looking at photos of themselves on the wall. And it was, I wonder what it was like to see these people looking at themselves, memorialized like that.
It was, I didn't know what to expect. And it was actually, at the end, it was gratifying to me to see them. There's a picture of Marianne Campanella there, and she jokes about how she has the same hairdo, but now it's gray. But she said she was very proud of me, that I did the neighborhood proud. And that was good. That was good. Another lady, Anna Brato, who's in one of the family pictures, she said, why didn't you use another picture of me? You know, she had the suggestion about when she was at Easter time, she was making this elaborate Easter bread with eggs and this and that. And she told me I should include that next time.
It sounds like you got both some high praise and some and thoughtful some, criticism.
Right. It's like family, you know. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you're looking to put together a book of these Little Italy photos. Once you get that accomplished, do you have another project for you and your camera?
No. It's a short answer. Even to get it from this point to the book will be a lot of work, because there are lots of interviews to go through. I mean, there's a lot there, and I want to get this one done and done right.
Well, Harry Connolly, congratulations on what has turned out to be a major documentary accomplishment, a definitive 16-year-long, 20,000-plus photo history of Baltimore's Little Italy. And thanks for coming in and sharing the stories with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Aaron.
For The Signal, I'm Aaron Hinken.